Hi, I'm Erwin McManus, and this is the Mosaic Podcast. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And if you're one of our regular listeners, we love the fact that you journey with us. And we pray that every single message inspires you and helps you become the person that God created you to be. Every single week, we send a new message across the world. And everything we do here at Mosaic is made available to everyone in the world for absolutely free. The reason we can do that is that we have incredible people who give generously and sacrificially to make this possible. And I want to invite you to join us. If you're already a giver, thank you so much. If this is something you've not yet done, I want to invite you to start doing that now. Go to mosaic.org/give and give a one-time gift, or even beyond that, become a recurring giver here at Mosaic. And if you're one of those individuals who God has blessed in an amazing way financially, I want to invite you to become one of our partners here at Mosaic. What's really beautiful about Mosaic is that our biggest givers are families who do not live here in Los Angeles, but they are so committed to the message of Jesus going to the world that they support the work here from Los Angeles to the ends of the earth. And so I want to invite you again, go to mosaic.org/give, become a part of our support system, become one of our partners. And more than anything else, I want you to listen to the message, allow Jesus to speak to you in a way that will change your life.
So we're at this intersection moment as a community of faith. We've just come down from the mountain, and those of us who came down, we've been blinded by the light, and we've come back. I don't know if you can tell, we're glowing, and because we went to Mount Zion, and man, it was like glorious, and now we've come down, and it's hard to explain everything that happened, except that our lives will testify of it by the way we live differently. Have you ever had a moment in your life where you just knew something big was going to happen? By the way, right before we started worshiping, Hank and Sue Ann had their little baby girl. Awesome. We love you, Hank and Sue Ann. Amen. Oh, ever the selfie. All right. That's awesome. And, I have a feeling Sue Ann's facial expression at that moment was a little different, but and you could almost predict that they're going to have a baby because she was about to explode. See, you know a baby is coming when someone's pregnant. You can see a little. You can see a little baby bump, and then it becomes a larger baby bump, and then it becomes a human bump, and then it becomes get out of me bump, and there's a labor, and there's a pain that comes in that birth. But you shouldn't expect to have a baby if you're not pregnant. It doesn't usually work in that order. I can tell you, it's the same way in life. Like when you are pregnant with faith, you should expect that God's going to birth something beautiful in your life. And I'm telling you, Mosaic, she's pregnant. She is. And I think she's having twins. And because something beautiful is about to happen. But in those moments where God does extraordinary things, he calls us to extraordinary things. And over the years, we've had to stop and step back and remind ourselves that the context for a miracle is always sacrifice. I don't know anyone who believes in Jesus who doesn't want God to do miraculous things. I hear it all the time. And in fact, you can go to seminars where you can learn how to heal, you can learn how to perform miracles, you can learn how to prophesy, you can do all these different things. And what I think is so interesting about us is that we all want the miracle. But what we don't really realize is the context of the miracle. It's not about technique or training. It's not even about belief or faith. It is about a commitment to sacrifice, to step into what God is about to give birth. Because birth always comes with a pain of labor. And what you find in the scriptures is that there is this intersection. When God is about to do something great, he calls you to greatness. When God is about to elevate his work, he calls us to elevate our faith. Listen to the words in Joshua chapter 3. It says, early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out for Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over. They're about to cross the Jordan. After 3 days, the officers went throughout the camp, giving orders to the people. When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the Levitical priest carrying it, you are to move out from your position and follow it. Then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. I love that line. Then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. And before we go on, I want you to know that with all that's ever happened here at Mosaic, with everything we've ever experienced, what I know about where we're at is we're about to go somewhere we've never been before. But keep a distance of about 2,000 cubits between you and the ark. Do not go near it. The Ark of the Covenant was the promise of God's presence and power. Joshua told the people, here it is, verse 5. This we're going to circle tonight. Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. We'll try that again. Because some of you didn't hear how awesome this verse is. This is God speaking to the people of Israel. This is God speaking to his people. This is God saying, I'm about to blow your minds. So get ready. So you need to be ready. And the way you get ready is to consecrate yourselves. For tomorrow, the Lord will do amazing things among you. There we go. And we love the Lord's going to do amazing things for us. We're not that crazy about the consecrate yourself part, are we? But I want you to notice the order. And the Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all of Israel so that they may know that I am with you as I was with Moses. Tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan's water, go and stand in the river. Joshua said to the Israelites, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you, that the living God is among you. This is how you will know. And then he will certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Girgashites, Amorites, and Jebusites, and all the other ites that you could ever imagine. See, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth will go into the Jordan ahead of you. Now then choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe. And as soon as the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot on the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in a heap. So when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest. He wants you to know this little detail. Yet as soon as the priests who carried the Ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from the upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Sarathon, while the water flowing down to the Sea of Araba, that is the Dead Sea, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stopped in the middle of Jordan and stood on dry ground while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. Now, does this story sound familiar to you with different characters? Now, we've discovered that sequels are usually not better than the originals, but this moment, the sequel had an added moment of suspense and intensity. You see, the Jordan was different than the Red Sea, and Joshua was different than Moses, and this people were a generation apart. But what you have is almost a parallel moment where God, a generation before, spoke to Moses and told him to raise up his staff and the waters would part. And after the waters parted the Red Sea, the nation of Israel will go through and find freedom out of Egypt and then wander in the wilderness for 40 years. And now, Now Moses is dead. In fact, that's how the book of Joshua begins. Now Moses, my servant, is dead. That's not an optimistic beginning. But this is central to this moment. See, Joshua never knew what it was like to live his life without Moses. He never knew how powerful his faith was apart from Moses. He knew God was with Moses. He wasn't really that sure if God was with him. He knew God was with Moses, and he knew Moses was with him, but he didn't really know if God would be with him if Moses was no longer with him. And now he is shaking in his boots. And Joshua chapter 1, over and over and over again, God keeps saying to him, do not be afraid, do not be afraid, do not be afraid, fear not, for the Lord your God is with you. And the reason God has to keep saying over and over and over again, do not be afraid, is because he was afraid. And now God says to him, in this moment where Joshua is going to own his faith as his own, in this moment where Joshua is no longer Moses' aide, but he is the leader of the nation of Israel. In this moment, God says, now we're going to do this a little differently this time. When you select these 12, and when they step out into the water, when the soles of their feet touch the water, that's when the water is going to part. Now you can imagine Joshua going, no, that's not the way it works. Because I know how it works. The last time I heard Moses say it, like 1,000 times over again. If I know one story, it's that one. Moses was a talker. And so he's telling that story. Remember when God parted the waters? I mean, if that happened to you, wouldn't you tell that story over and over again? And in fact, you find that throughout the history of Israel. They tell the same story over and over and over again. And I think sometimes in my own life, if I tell a story once, I don't want to tell it again. And tonight, as I was just reflecting on this moment where God says, consecrate yourself because tomorrow the Lord is going to do amazing things, I kept remembering, and God said, I just want you to tell some old stories because I'm about to write a new story. I want you to remember, Irwin, what I've done because I'm going to blow your mind with what I'm about to do, but I need the faith of what I did in your life to be the fuel for what I'm about to do in your life. And I have a feeling that there are a lot of us here tonight that want God to do what he's done in the past or want God to make sense of life. But in this moment, when God said to Joshua, I want the soles of your feet to touch the water. See, I think what Joshua said, no, that's not what you do, God, because first you part the water and then we walk through. That's the way you did it. And he goes, yeah, it is the way I did it, but I'm really creative. See, I already did that, so I don't feel a need to do that again. I'm just going to add a little nuance to it. And by the way, Joshua, because I did it the other way before, that's not going to be faith for you because you've already experienced that. You know what the crazy thing is? What was faith for you yesterday is not faith for you today. And what is faith for you today is not faith for you tomorrow. Now, it took faith for us to get here. I'm telling you, it took faith for us to get here. And if you're here tonight and it didn't take any of your faith to get you here, it took our faith to get you here. It took faith to get us here. But what happens so oftentimes is when it takes faith to get us somewhere, then we think that somewhere is exactly where God wants to keep us. But God's, no, you're not supposed to settle. You're supposed to pioneer. And I think the mistake the church has made so many times is the church thinks it's supposed to be a settler. It's always supposed to be a pioneer. It's always supposed to be an explorer. It's always supposed to be a discoverer and an adventure. And God is always calling us into a future. And so since he parted the waters before and they walked through dry land, this time God says, I'm going to do a little bit differently. This time the water is only going to part when the soles of your feet touch because I need a little more faith from you than I needed last time. And I'm telling you what God wants to do in our community going forward is going to take just a little bit more faith than ever before. And since it took all this faith to get us here, imagine how much faith it's going to take to get us from here into the future. So here it is. You can say, well, I just can't wait to see what happens. And if you wait to see what happens, you're going to regret it the rest of your life. You need to not wait to see what happens. You need to be what happens. And you'll know who you are. You'll know who you are when you decide that what God is saying is for you. Consecrate yourselves. For tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things. That word consecrate, I just wanted to make sure, so I checked it in the dictionary. And it's exactly what I thought. It means to set yourselves apart for a sacred endeavor, a sacred purpose. To set yourself apart, consecrate yourself. And I love how God said that to Joshua, and it was also meant for the 12 leaders of the 12 tribes. It was meant for every single person in every single tribe. See, everyone who's going to pass through that water needed to make a decision to trust God with their life and to walk forward into the future. And we don't want to leave anyone behind. But it begins by consecrating yourself. And sometimes that's about getting stuff out of your life that shouldn't have been there anyway. When you consecrate yourself, you're saying, God, my life is yours. God, I am all about what you're about. Whatever career I have, whatever job I have, whatever direction I have, whatever mission I have, that your life is completely consecrated for God's purpose and intention. And what God is looking for is a people who are not interested in simply adding God to their lives, but letting God be the source of their lives. So I want to ask you tonight, will you consecrate yourself? Well, will you look through your life and go, I got to get rid of this. This is baggage. This is not honorable to God. This is a mess in my life. My friends have gotten used to it. You know, it's like bad smelling cheese. Oh no, it's just gourmet. And you may confuse God's mercy and his grace with God's pleasure and blessing. See, when you carry the baggage around, when you carry the stuff around, when you carry all this stuff in your character, and you carry it in your soul, and you carry it in your imagination, and you carry it with you, and God doesn't strike you dead, you go, God's cool with it. And I want you to know God's incredibly gracious and loving and kind. But if you want to fly, you got to cut the anchors. And God's saying, I want you to consecrate yourself because you're going to some place that you've never been before, and you're leaving behind the place you're never going to return to. And sometimes consecrating yourself is about intention and mission. It's about, God, my life is about you. Sometimes it's about identification. God, I'm tired of living in secrecy about who you are. And sometimes it's just about stepping past this line of faith where you no longer are reasonable. And now you're out of your mind for God. And I just, it's funny, like these moments just start going back in my mind going, it's just like God said, remember this, Erwin. Remember what I did and how you went crazy. And you could never go back. I became a follower of Christ on August 20th, 1978. I was baptized on August 27th, 1978. And I remember going back to college that next Monday. And I went to everything. I went to the Roman Catholic Mass on the university campus and to the Pentecostal Bible study. I went with the Baptists and the Presbyterians, with Campus Crusade and Young Life. It didn't even matter. To me, it was just like just a buffet of belief. And they had the most interesting people, and it was always a different flavor and a different color, and sometimes it was just ice cream and sometimes it was nuts. But I loved it all. And I remember meeting this girl named Lynn, and she used to let me use her guitar. And I would learn how to play the guitar with her, and I kind of liked her a little bit, but, you know, I was a brand new Christian, and she'd been a Christian for a lot longer, and so I think I was probably more of a mess than she was interested in. Or at least I got a guitar out of it. And then one day she came to me, and she said, I you don't know my life before Jesus. She looked the perfect, like, Christian girl, you know what I'm talking about? Like the person who looks like she was raised in the perfect home. You know, on the Warner Brothers lot or something like that, and with the perfect family and everything. And she goes, you know, I used to live with my boyfriend, Kenny, and I was involved, you know, in drugs and, you know, in alcohol, and my life was just a disaster. And I was kind of shocked because she just looked like the perfect person. But what really shocked me is when she said, I just don't feel God anymore. I just don't feel Jesus is real. I called up my old boyfriend, Kenny. He's coming back to get me. I'm leaving college, and I'm going back to my old life. And I'd only been a follower of Christ a couple of months. I mean, I didn't have a lot of resources. And I remember looking at her and I said, if there's any way that Jesus could prove his love for you, I know he would do it. And of course, now I know that Jesus proved his love for us by dying on the cross, but that didn't occur to me right then because I was sort of new at this thing. And then she looked at me, and I'm telling you, I'm not exaggerating this. I'm not embellishing it. I'm telling you exactly what she said. She looked at me, and she goes, okay, then I want God to make it snow. And I remember thinking to myself, what? This is why I cannot communicate with women, right? Because, like, where did that come from? Who has that in their back pocket? Oh, okay. You know, and I remember being so shocked and disoriented that I heard someone look at her and say, God is going to make it snow to prove his love for you. And then I realized I said it. And when I said it, I got really nervous. I thought, how did that come out of my mouth? And I didn't have it planned. And then I tried to fix it. And I said, within 24 hours. I meant he would need more than 24 hours, but I got it all messed up. And then I left, because you really can't say anything after that. And I remember going to my dorm room, and I pulled down my shade. I closed the doors. I turned off the lights. I got on my face, and I started just crying out to God. I said, God, I don't know where that came from. It could have been you. Was it you? And could have been me. I don't know. And I remember saying, God, if it wasn't you, could you, like, adopt it? It's a really good idea. And I didn't know. I just knew. I was saying, God, all I know is that I just want to live my life for you. I just want to be proof of God. And I just prayed and prayed for hours. Well, I fell asleep. But I consider unconscious prayer as a part of the mass total, and it's all about intention. And hours later, my roommate Mark opened the door, and when I saw him, I woke up and I had like the prayer mark on my forehead, you know. And then he, you know, I'm talking about, you know, if you ever fallen asleep praying. But at least I had prayer marks. A lot of you don't even have a prayer mark. You don't know why God's not working. And he goes, Irwin, have you looked outside? When he said it kind of caustic, jaded. And I thought, he knows. He knows. And I found out that Lynn ran all over campus telling everyone, God's going to make a snow for me because he loves me. God's going to make a snow for me because he loves me. Who says that? Who does that? Right? I didn't. I didn't tell anyone. I went back to my room and only told God, you know, that I was in a bad situation. And I think about my roommate Mark. I wish I'd read the Gospel of Mark, not the Gospel of John, because that's all I'd read was the Gospel of John. And Jesus said, he who believes in me, the works that I do, he shall do an even greater works than these, because I go to my Father in heaven. So I thought that that would work, because I believed in Jesus, and I know he went to his Father in heaven, so the stuff in the middle of this work, that he who believes in me will do the works that I do an even greater works than these. So I thought, I believe in him, and so maybe I can do the greater works that Jesus did. I don't know what they are, but I'm up for it. But if I'd read the Gospel of Mark, Jesus would perform a miracle and say, go tell no one, which I should have told her, you know? Anyway, see how the Bible can help you? But I remember when he said that to me, I felt this overwhelming sense of anxiety and distress. And I got up and I went over to the window and I took a deep breath and I pulled up the shades and there was snow everywhere. I mean, there's snow everywhere. Now, I'm telling you this. See, I'm telling you this tonight, and some of you know this story, but I'm telling you this because I'm going to tell you a story of what has happened in my life, because we're about to write a story of something that's never happened in my life. See, I want to tell you a story of faith because we're about to write a story of faith. And I didn't know any better because I'd only known Jesus for about 3 months. I didn't know any better. And I still to this day don't know if that was like God saying, you know, God's going to make it snow, or whether he was whispering inside of my soul, whether it was just me going crazy, or maybe it was just me going, you know, frantic because this girl needed help. All I know is that when I ran down the campus and I was running through that snow that had 0% chance of snow that day, I found this girl making angel's wings in the snow. She did not go back to her old boyfriend. And I may not have got it right, but I got something right. And I knew it the whole time. And there was going to snow. I was so sure of it. You know what? Sometimes consecrating yourself means crossing the line and just taking that step of faith and watching God do what you cannot do. Identifying yourself with who Jesus is and stepping into that space where either God shows up or you are utterly humiliated. See, I think that we all play a safe faith. We have our rational, intelligent faith. We have our artsy, hipster faith. We have our cool Angelino faith. We have our really solid Western Christianity faith. But I think we need a different kind of faith that says, I just want to be pregnant, God. I want to be pregnant with faith so that you give birth to something that is absolutely a miracle in my life. So I want you to hear me tonight. I am so convinced what God is saying to us is consecrate yourselves. For tomorrow, the Lord will do amazing things. And he's just waiting to see who will respond to his voice and say, I will consecrate myself, God. I will make myself your tool. God, I dedicate me, my life, everything I am, everything I have, all my gifts, my talents, my intellect, my passions, my words, my actions, my thoughts, my deeds, everything, God, I give to you. And I'm getting too old to run slow. Some of you are just slowing me down. I had knee surgery. And I'm getting ready to run. And I want to know who wants to run with me. Because I'm crossing the Jordan. And I don't want to just cross it when it's dry. I want to feel that cold, wet water against the heel of my foot. Because I'm the one who steps in to clear the way for those who follow behind. I just wonder, are you ready to get your feet wet? Or are your shoes too nice to walk into the river? And then my mind leapt forward to a moment when Kim and I were working among the urban poor, and we had such big dreams, and people were so broken and struggling. The average income was welfare. Almost everyone was unemployed. Most of the people that we brought to faith were out of the world of drug addiction or drug dealing or prostitution. I cannot tell you the times people would walk in. I still remember this one woman on this cold winter night coming in, and all she had was a jacket, and she was utterly naked, and her pockets were filled with used hypodermic needles, and she'd been attacked and raped, and all of her clothes was taken. That's the world we lived in and served and worked with. I'll never forget when W.L. walked in with half of his face having been blown off by a shotgun, $300,000 of reconstructive surgery to make him look human again. And we were working so hard, and I saw this plot of land on Grand and Irving Street in downtown Dallas. And I thought, man, it's the only piece of undeveloped land in this area, and it would be so great to put a church there. And in fact, there was a law that said you cannot have a liquor store within certain feet of a church, and there was a liquor store right next to that property. And so they actually had to stop us from buying that property and putting a church there. And I said, no, the law is there to protect the church, not the liquor store. And we don't need protection. And we want to be next to the liquor store. And it was such a great moment when the city realized we were allowed to move next to a liquor store, but the liquor store couldn't move next to us. And we bought this property. It was so inexpensive. It was unbelievably inexpensive. It was strange that for the 100 years or so that Dallas has been developed, this property was just sitting there. And then a year later, when we put our resources together and we were ready to build our building, we did a core sample. We went at least 25 feet deep, and we found that it was a landfill, and there was no good soil to be found. And we did a second core sample, and it was a landfill there too, and there was no soil. And I remember getting called in by the organization that financed the property. I'd never heard a Christian cuss before. And I sat down with this man, and it wasn't like massive profanity, but he just said, son, do you know that piece of crap you talked me into buying? I said, yes, sir. And then he went on to say some other things. And he made it very clear to me that I'd wasted God's money, that I'd led them in the purchase of this real estate, because I went to them, I said, hey, look, buy this property, because you don't think our church is going to make it, do you? And they said, there's no way you're going to make it. That's the highest crime rate, highest murder rate area in the United States. There's no way a church is going to survive there. I said, well, then buy the property, because when we close our doors, you can sell the property for more. So I was just appealing to the real estate savvy and their economic motivation. And now they didn't have that anymore. And I just caused them to waste all their money. I remember I would just go out to that landfill day after day after day, and I would walk in that property, and I took these words from Joshua where it says, everywhere the sole of your foot touches will be yours. And I just said, God, I know that's not exactly what this verse means, but it needs to be exactly what this verse means right now. And I can tell you, this is not metaphorical. This is literal. I walked that property over and over and over and over, day after day and week after week and month after month. And I said, God, everywhere I set the sole of my feet, it is mine. And I claim this land. I'm just going to claim, and I'm going to ask you, God, to turn it into soil. I'm just going to ask you, God, to somehow make it possible to build a building here, because I couldn't pray, God, let us cheat someone else and sell it. And so I was like, God, you have to do something. I went back to that man who was in charge of that property, and I said, oh, there was a day I was actually out there praying for that property, and I went back to our little tiny duplex where we were having our services with a space heater with my polyester suits. And I remember this woman stood up who, you ever know someone who just, like, they believe in Jesus, they believe in God, but they don't really have, like crazy faith? They have, like, really rational faith. And these, we became famous as the church on the dump. And, I was the guy that bought the landfill. I became really famous for that. And this whole group came from out of the city, and they came to do, like, this little missionary work. And without meaning any harm, the guy said, hey, what are you going to do with that landfill? Which I kept getting asked every time I saw someone. And it just cut into my soul. And I remember this woman said, oh, we've already asked God to turn it into soil. It'll be fine. I think she said that because she was just so tired of everybody trampling over my failure. But when she said that, something awakened inside of me. I went, I think she believes. I mean, I know I believe, but I think I've lost my mind. But she believes, and I think she's still sort of like rooted in reality. And so I went back to the organization, and I said, could you take one last core sample? And I remember where I stood all the time and prayed. I said, could you take it right here on the property? And the guy said, son, do you know how much a core sample costs? About $3,000, by the way. And I said, no, sir, but you've already wasted a lot of money anyway. And why not one more? And just out of sheer frustration, he took a third core sample. And I stand before you today telling you, when that third core sample was taken, that property came out soil. And to this day, there's a church building on that property on Grand and Irve. And the reason I'm telling you this, because there's a lot of you who are new here, and you don't know where Kim and I have come from. See, you do not know the challenges we have faced and the miracles we have seen. You don't know what has shaped us and shaken us and torn us to shreds. You do not know the failures I have made in my life and then watch God take the rubble of my failures to do something so extraordinary that it looks like I had it planned the whole time. I just think most of us are too afraid to fail to give God the material to do his great work. To see the waters part, they had to be willing to drown. I wonder tonight, who's willing to risk going into the deep waters of the river? Because sometimes you think it's God and you just go floating down, going, yeah, I don't think that was the plan. But God is amazing enough that even when we get it wrong, he gets it right. And he uses us in the most beautiful and amazing of ways. And then we ended up here. Here, what are the chances we would end up here? I mean, I remember when there were like 9 other churches and organizations trying to get this property. And there was just, we could not afford it because you guys are broke. And we like are with you now. And all of us together couldn't do what needed to happen to make this happen. And then suddenly God sends this guy to a Buddhist healer in Colorado, and the Buddhist healer sends him to a French psychic in Paris, and the French psychic sends him to Los Angeles to a church called Mosaic to find what his soul is searching for. And when he finds Jesus here, we didn't know that he could write a check that was nearly $1 million that got us into this property so that we could pay the deposit and have the first year's rent already paid for. And he was only here for a short window of our history. But don't you think if God could take a man and move him across the world and bring him right here just in time to meet us at our point of need, that God isn't ready to meet us with wonders tomorrow? Our part is not the wonders part. That's God's part. God's part is the wonders part. Our part is the consecration part. Because the context for miracle is sacrifice. And if we're not willing to sacrifice for what God wants to do here, we're not worthy of the trust for God to pour out his spirit and do great and marvelous things among us. I've had some friends tell me, oh, you seem like you're becoming more Pentecostal. Actually, I'm not. I'm just becoming like what I was when I became a follower of Jesus. Because when you become a follower of Jesus, everything just gets flipped upside down. And nothing makes sense except for God. Because God begins to write your reality over again, because what you thought was real wasn't real because it was just too small. And I don't want us to step into a future that we can organize. I do not want us to embrace a future that we can finance. I do not want us to create a future that we can create. I want us to posture our hearts and our lives and say, God, I am all in. I am yours. I choose to consecrate myself because I know what you want to do in my life and in our lives can only happen when all of our lives belong to you. That's where we need to be. And so we came up to MTN. I'm telling you, 3 weeks beforehand, we may have had 200 people actually paid. And we're having to readjust, and then the flood comes, some landslide wipes out the camp, and on their website, you know, natural disaster, and we're going, what else could go wrong? And then suddenly, we get the swell of movement. One person calls up and says, I want to give $10,000 to scholarship people who don't know Jesus so that they can go to MTN, and that person doesn't even go to our church. Isn't that a beautiful thing? And then we have 800 people show up there, and about 50 of you, because you didn't register on time, were like desperate because you couldn't get to go. And I'm just going to tell you, I already had decided this was our last Terra Nova, last MTN. I was just going to just end it, just mercy killing. And just so tired. And then just watching how God moved, and we saw 38 people respond in baptism, and we felt the presence of God so powerfully. And I just thought, man, this is like last year with all the mistakes we made and all the mess we create. God just keeps showing up at Mosaic and saying, I am not even getting started yet, much less finished. So I want to ask you guys just a couple of really concrete, practical things. We try so hard to keep things on a down low in terms of the way we ask people to give, but I want to ask you to start really giving. I want to ask you to begin to tithe if you're not tithing, and give generously beyond that if you're already tithing. Because it is what we do together that makes us strong. And when we sacrifice together, it is our heart's posture toward God saying, God, we want more. And more of you in this place. Because we have been entrusted by God to be a community of faith that reaches a people that may never be reached by any other church or any other people. Every church has its unique gift and its unique approach and its unique contribution to the world. But what we're doing really matters in the world. I have so many friends who have said, I just would never believe in God except the way Mosaic expressed Jesus to me. It was Mosaic that helped me see Jesus for who he is. And if that's you, then you know why this is so important. I said at MTN, we're going to start taking registration tonight because I am so sick and tired of our MTN event, Terra Nova, becoming like a sales challenge. I don't like selling. And if I have to sell you to get there, then it's not a movement, it's just an event. And I'm just so done with events. But I want to be a part of a movement. So I want to challenge you to sign up tonight for next year's MTN. Now, here's the crazy thing. We don't know where we're going. We have no idea what camp will take us. We don't know if we're going to go to an open field and just build a city. We don't know if we're going to have toilet paper or plumbing. I'm going to ask you to sign up, not because you like the accommodations, you like the location, because you know there's good coffee nearby, or you can tolerate the bed and the food. I'm going to ask you to sign up tonight because you are a part of this movement, and because it matters to you, and because we're a part of this creative revolution that Jesus started 2,000 years ago, and it's time for you to own up and make it yours too.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the Mosaic Podcast. As God has spoken into your life, one of the things that Jesus teaches us is that when we've been invested in, we need to also become investors. And I want to encourage you right now, if Mosaic is one of the platforms from which you grow spiritually, you connect more deeply to God, and your faith with Jesus becomes more real, I want to encourage you right now to go to mosaic.org and become one of our givers. Give a one-time gift, become a recurring giver, become a part of what God's doing across the world. Mosaic isn't just a church in Los Angeles. Mosaic is all of us working together.